The Social Expedition. Fueling your digitally social experience. Produced by LunaWeb, this is show number 38, July 22nd, 2010. Hey, and this is going to be the Illions show.
That's I-L-L-I-O-N-S?
Yeah, I think so. You know, and put your favorite consonant in front of it, you know, whether it be a B or a M or a G. Wait, a guzz.
A tra.
Oh, tra. Yeah, okay. Trillions. Yeah. So our special guest coming in later is Andy Glover, who, amongst other things, is also a doctoral student, which I hadn't really realized that, of, check this out, organizational development and change. So looking forward to that.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, so this is kind of like the Illions show, because it seems like everything you look at these days is some kind of Illions going on. Mm-hmm. Big numbers out there flying around. You've got some right here.
Yep. Well, the first couple we have that have made major news is that Facebook has passed 500 million users.
That's half a billion.
That's a lot of people.
So, and wait, and there's, so you were just looking at this, there's only what? There are
6.7 billion people.
On the planet. And this is like 1/12 of them are on Facebook, evidently. Now, how many times are you on Facebook?
In life, or a day, or?
No. How many profiles are there with your name on it?
Just two.
Two.
I've got my account that I use for LunaWeb, and then I've got my personal account.
Do you have friends that have more than two?
I've got a couple other friends that have, like, a professional profile that mm-hmm. they also have, either for their job or in order to connect with their coworkers through Facebook and not have to worry about the content that they're putting on their personal profile.
Yeah. Do you know anybody that's got three of them?
I do not.
Because I wonder if it's like, oh, no, I have a Facebook profile for my family, I have a Facebook profile for my friends, you know, and then I have one for work. I wonder if there are people like that.
It seems excessive.
Because I wonder if, out of this 500 million users, I mean, how many humans does that represent?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we know it wouldn't be 250 million. Not half, but no. Probably somewhere in between 250 and 5. Definitely not 5, though. And this is the problem. One of the terms of service that Facebook has is that you can only have one account per human being. And no doubt, because so that they can keep track of and run statistics like this and let people know, you know, hey, 1/12 of the planet is connected to Facebook.
But it doesn't work like that exactly.
It doesn't. We, back at a South by Southwest ago, not this year's, but last year's, there was I think it was the CTO or something like that. He was there from Facebook. So I was able to talk with him for a moment and say, hey, we're a web agency and, you know, we've got people that are uploading content for clients, you know, that we have to take care of their presences for because we manage their stuff. But it comes time when sometimes some of these LunaWeb employees move on to some other things and they can't take all that content with them because it's the company, but the company can't have an account per se. And we have to create multiple accounts, which is against the terms of service. And he was just kind of acknowledged that, yeah, that's kind of the way you have to do it these days. So yeah. I was like, okay.
Or
someday, though.
You know, there's also probably a great deal of just made up people on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Have you made up somebody?
No, I've never made up someone, but I remember in the earlier days, people made up profiles for celebrities.
Oh, that's right.
So there would be fake.
Yeah.
Fake President Bush and. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so now there's even fake companies, right? Yeah. So like the fake BP is one of them, the BP PR.
Well, that's on Twitter. I don't know if they're on Facebook.
Right. I gotcha. Yes, true.
But they used to have, you know, fake celebrities, and you could go and be their friend. And I used to be friends with Bill Clinton, I think. Like, fake Bill Clinton.
Oh, fake Bill. Okay. Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, hey, so some other aliens that are out there are... There are, remember these like buttons that Facebook really, in the life of Facebook, recently came out with.
Really?
Maybe a couple months ago. And there are billions of the like buttons served on the web every day.
There are 1 million websites that have integrated with the Facebook platform. So that's 1 million external websites mm-hmm. that have put like a like button or like box or one of those Facebook social plugins on their website. And it says on their press room statistics that more than 150 million people engage with Facebook on external websites every month.
Great.
So that's people Facebooking, not on Facebook. Mm-hmm. 150 million of them a month.
Yeah, so, you know, for those that the new to Facebook, why that's such a big deal is once upon a time, Facebook then was referred to as this walled garden type of a concept where you couldn't really see anything on Facebook unless you were a member of Facebook, mm-hmm. and you were logged in, then you could see stuff. That was once upon a time ago.
Those were such days back when I was a freshman in college.
Those would be called the luring days. The days back when we were all being lured into Facebook. Now it's very transparent. Not only can you not have to be a member to see stuff inside of some things inside of Facebook, but also that Facebook is spilling out, mm-hmm. you know, into the rest of the planet. So with that's part of the genius that a lot of people recognize in Facebook. Yes. And so that's kind of why it's a little unstoppable at this point.
I think Facebook should come out with a browser.
You know, once upon a time, there was an iteration where at the bottom of the page on Facebook, it almost looked like your classic Windows start button and would show you your active apps and this type of thing. There was a bar at the bottom.
I liked that. I remember.
I liked it too. It was handy. But a lot of people said that, hey, you know, this is a precursor to having Facebook as its own operating system type of thing, where you just kind of do everything inside of Facebook. And that's they changed their thinking on that. You know, that bar is now gone.
I liked the bar. I wouldn't mind actually a Facebook-like browser or more integration. I certainly want them to have a better search.
Yeah, I think that's like the icing on the cake. I think, you know, they got something cooking there, but they're just sitting on it and leaving it nice and lousy for a while.
Yeah. But also in terms of Facebook, just people need to be aware. There have been some scams the last couple days. Two new scams have come out. One saying that a woman went to jail for taking pictures of her son and posting them to Facebook, and one that says McDonald's is going to shut down because of something or other, and it gets you to click a link, and then it steals all the information from your profile. So I'm gonna post those, the exact copy that can be found in those in the blog post. So check that out so that you don't get scammed by that. But really, if you think McDonald's is going to be closing anytime soon because of really anything, it would take a mammoth-type PR disaster to take down McDonald's.
I think the extinction of cows might see the end of McDonald's.
I guess so.
Yeah, something terrible like that.
I'm sure they dread things like Mad Cow, but...
Right. You know, while you're talking about that, one of the things that really comes into play when you start talking about these security risks, these frequent security risks, is that people will kind of not have as much trust in Facebook as far as, you know, how secure it is, and are going to be more reluctant to put sensitive information out there because of the security risks. So when, you know, there are people that right now that are talking about, you know, being able to have your medical information out there on Facebook, and also some legal information, also some financial information with regard to like a wallet where you can just set up your account, a charge account, so to speak, through Facebook, kind of like a PayPal, but doing it with Facebook so that you can go buy things. And the more and more that there are these types of these phishing scams that are out there tricking people, the less faith that they're going to have in the ability to put that sensitive information out there. So this kind of hurts them quite a bit. So anyway, that's just another thing that kind of comes into play here. That no doubt, in the grand scheme of Facebook, they're going to want to cut this stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, it really hurts them in a number of ways.
Well, moving on from Facebook, let's see. We've got another aliens. We've got Foursquare has reported that they have over 100 million check-ins every day. So that platform has just exploded.
Huh. I don't know. I'm not checking on Foursquare every day. Probably every other day. I'm checking into at least one place.
Yeah.
You know, I know, like at the theater here recently, there was that movie out called Inception.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of checking into the venue, I kind of went about trying to see, okay, what would happen if I create a venue for people to check in on the movie, just to see what happens.
And I disagree with that motion.
Yeah, that's fine. But, you know, so some other people that are maybe checking in, they can check into the movie theater, or they might check into this to the movie itself. And if you've seen the movie, then it's time to wake up. But anyhow, so that's very interesting. This whole Foursquare notion and the location-based services is really, you know, taking off. And I don't know what their exit strategy is, but I'm sure one option is always to be purchased by somebody big.
Right.
You know,
right.
With a nice cash out and course, that's how Foursquare was started, actually. Their exit strategies, the guys that started Foursquare were actually part of another company.
Right, they started Dodgeball before that, didn't
which
they?
Which was purchased and shut down. And so they were able to take this money from selling their old company and go out and start this new one. So that's how it goes.
Well, Foursquare is clearly growing much faster than Gowalla. I think I read that it's growing 5 times faster than Gowalla, which is huge. But I think we might see Scavenger pick up. And Scavenger spelled S-C-V-N-G-R, so Scavenger without any of the vowels. Oh. Has even more of a game type feel, like you go and, you know, gather virtual items and complete tasks and things like that. It's more of a like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
And then they've actually got a cool check-in thing. You check in with other people. So, you know, you and I would take out our mobile phones and we would open Scavenger and we would like almost like fist bump our phones together.
Oh, yeah. And body slam the phones.
It checks us both in. So, you know, I think what we'll see is, you know, people having the most people at once checking in with a scavenger fist bump, because you can do, you know, as many people as you have all at once. They all just hold their phones up together and
oh, really?
It checks everybody in.
Oh,
so you
that
can,
sounds like
I
fun.
Saw a video where they did like 8 people mm-hmm. all at once.
Okay.
Held out their phones.
Just like a big toast.
Yeah. So that's what's going on with location-based services.
You know, and Gowalla, I kind of like Gowalla. I hope they figure out a way to make some headway. And of course, there's these applications out there now that will automatically update and post to both locations.
Ooh.
You know, and then I've also seen over at South by Southwest some apps that are out there that will aggregate your friends, your Gowalla friends, and your Foursquare friends to let you know what's going on with them. Mm. You know, so when you start to take a look at a lot of these apps, there's these tools that will let you both broadcast out and then these aggregation type things that will pull stuff together. Like we talk about the emergency broadcast type of setup there using ping, that's a broadcast out. Other that's types of systems like FriendFeed is a famous one, of course now owned by Facebook, a really good aggregator. Speaking of aggregators, there's a new iPad app out called Flipboard.
And it is so pretty.
It does a wonderful job of displaying this information in a very readable format, and it seems to be very intuitive the way that you interact with it. And it does a good job of aggregating right now. But at the moment, at this very moment, it is so popular that you need to just stay away from it, because they're adding capacity to it right now because it's a little bogged down. It won't even connect to Facebook or Twitter. And it's one of those deals where it's so popular, it took off so fast that it's almost hurting itself with the growth. It can't keep up with it. And so some people are being turned off by it.
But when it's working properly, it's supposed to pull in information from news sources as well as your Facebook and Twitter feeds, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can set up like 9 different channels, so to speak.
Cool.
Boards, I think is what they call them in the application. 9 different boards, one of them being your Facebook, one of them being Twitter, and then a few other that you're allowed to customize yourself.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
well,
so check
hopefully
that out.
They'll get control over their data and be able to function properly soon. Well, let's jump over to our interview now.
Alrighty, so we are here with Andy Glover, who is the help desk manager at Methodist, but even more significantly to the Social Expedition, is he's a doctoral student of organizational development and change. So, hey, welcome, Andy.
Hello, thanks. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we came to know you through several events, through some Launch Memphis things, and then most recently here from the Twilight Camps, and you've always shown up with some really excellent information, even beyond what we would, you know, the whole social realm.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
tell us a little bit more about this whole doctoral program that you're in on this organizational development and change.
Well, in the doctoral studies that I'm doing, I've been looking at how business development and how organizational development has changed with the advent of social networking, social media, in the way that social media and social networking have changed the way businesses operate, and it changes the way people interact with businesses. For instance, when you're going out trying to buy something, you're buying something online, or you're buying something at a local store, before the advent of social networks, you would have gone to your friends, you would have gone to coworkers, people right around you, people that you know, people that may have many of the similar likes that you have, may have similar dislikes. They're all within a circle that you know very well, and you would have asked for their advice, or you would have just gone off on your own and done your own research. Mm-hmm. However, with the advent of the internet and social networking, we're now making those type of buying decisions based not just on what our close network of friends tell us, but also what complete strangers tell us. The best example of this and the first real use of it was Amazon.com. The way Amazon has the user recommendations, they have the reviews where people rate things 1 to 5 stars, and people make buying decisions based on those reviews. Now, those people who put in reviews, you've never met them. You don't know who they are. You don't know where they come from. However, those complete strangers are now impacting your buying decisions. And it actually goes beyond that. Urban Spoon, which is an excellent site. I love using Urban Spoon, both on the web and the iPhone application, where you can actually just randomly select a restaurant based on its location, based on its style. There's all kinds of things that you can use. However, if you go in a little deeper and you find a restaurant and you look at what that restaurant serves, there's going to be a rating on that restaurant by other users of Urban Spoon and reviews of that restaurant as far as what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it. Before this, if you went to a restaurant, you either went blind, you walked into the restaurant and you're like, I don't know what they are, I'm just going to walk in and see what they have, but you find a lot of interesting things that way. Or you asked your friends.
Yeah.
You know, have you ever eaten here? Do you like it? Is it something? Now you've got this social network that I can now sit down and the recent trip I took to Colorado Springs, I wanted to see if there were some nice places to eat in a certain style. I went into Urban Spoon, changed my location to Colorado Springs, went through the restaurant list, selected the style of restaurant I want, the area of the city I wanted to eat in, and it gave me a complete list of restaurants, and then I could just step down and see what other people had to say. People I never met, people I didn't know, people I had no connection with other than this social site. Yeah. And based on their reviews, based on their ratings, I was able to select some restaurants. I was able to select places I wanted to go based on what they said and what their menus were on the Urban Spoon site.
Right.
So what we're seeing is the growing strength of weak ties, those ties that we have with people that we don't really know, they're kind of acquaintances, or even weaker than weak ties, second level or third level weak ties where we have no interaction with them whatsoever, but we're allowing them to interact our buying decisions. Now, flip this around to the business perspective. The business now has, where before they had could have a little control over what went out about them. Even in the early days of the web, it was very hard. There weren't very many sites that were posted with reviews or with what people were saying about businesses. Now there's a whole industry in the social networking space built around consumer information. Mm-hmm. So now businesses have to be aware not only of the way they're received in their advertising or received in the community at large, they now have to be aware of what's posted about them on the net, what's posted about them if they're a restaurant, what's in Urban Spoon, what's in Yelp, what are in all of these different programs that aggregate this, and how do they counteract it? How do they respond to it? You can take it even a step further, going beyond just the service sector, going into major business, where you have, 10 years ago, you would never have thought of emailing the CEO of a major corporation.
Right. Oh, yeah. Even if you worked there.
Even if you worked there, you wouldn't email the CEO. And the way I was raised, you wouldn't email the CEO even if he asked you to. You would try to find ways around it. But we live in a day and age where regular Joe Schmo on the street decides that Corporation A is not doing what he likes. He'll fire up his email client and send an email to what he thinks is the email address of the CEO, even if he doesn't know it. Or there are companies that actually post email addresses so that level of communication can take place. Mm-hmm. Best example of this, Steve Jobs. Okay, I would not even imagine sending someone that is the CEO of the largest tech company in the United States an email taking him to task over something that his company is doing. It's just not my style, but people have done that. and gotten responses.
Right.
And in some cases, changed the way Apple responds and interacts with its customer base.
Mm-hmm. So, and it's a company not known for delving into the social realm much at all.
None. You know? Yeah, and really, Apple, that is really the only social realm that that Apple even delves in. But if you imagine a company like Apple that doesn't delve in it, reacting to just a simple email, mm-hmm. you have other companies that now are responding very quickly using Twitter. Best example is Comcast Cares.
Right.
Okay. If yeah. you, I have back when I was a Comcast customer, I had a problem. I didn't even tweet to them saying I had a problem. I just went on fussing about my Comcast connection. 15 minutes later, I had an at reply. Mm-hmm. from them asking me for me to direct message them what my issue was.
Yeah.
That kind of interaction at the base level using social networking is where business is going to have to go, because if they don't go there, they're going to end up with a situation that BP has. When you have on Twitter the fake BP PR rep
yes.
that's putting mm-hmm. out all of those kind of pithy comments about BP's response to right. the oil spill, because BP was not on the ball and did something like that ahead of time, now they're having not only to respond to critics, but they're also having to deal with whatever damage might happen because of mm-hmm. this rogue account.
Yeah.
So you have to be prepared for that across the board.
You know, kind of lay it out for us, this notion. You mentioned mm-hmm. ties.
Yes.
In this realm, there are different kinds of ties. Yes. So explain that.
Well, there are two that I primarily talk about, and the two that I work with are strong and weak ties.
Mm-hmm.
Strong ties are ties to people that you are intimate with. And when I say that, they're people that you know, they're people that you're around a lot.
Right.
You know them in a way that goes deeper than just a one-dimensional relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, your strong ties are going to be people you know in person. It's not always that way. But family members, coworkers, people that have direct impact on your life. Weak ties are more along the lines of people you know in a one-dimensional or one location. For instance, friends that you have on Facebook that are just friends. You've never met them. You've never seen them. They ask to be your friend, or you ask to be their friend, and there they are. Those are weak ties. People on Twitter that you may follow or may follow you that you don't have a direct interaction with or you never met anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So weak ties are those kind of acquaintance type of relationships where in the past you listened to those kind of interactions, but you took the word of your strong ties over the word of your weak ties.
Yeah.
Well, social networking has allowed that to turn upside down
mm-hmm.
to where, because of the multitude of weak ties,
yeah.
I have 1,000 people who follow me and I follow close to 900 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all of those people.
Right.
But because of that interaction we have, they can sometimes sway me, or I can sway them in ways that in a general population just wouldn't be possible in a strong tie. So,
you know, we're talking about the restaurant thing and
yes.
and the influence of the weak ties on your decision to go to a particular restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes I think, you know, the other thing that comes into play is a strong tie, I may know so much better, and I may know, let's say, for example, let's pick on Ansley, right? That she likes to eat weird stuff. And so if Ansley says this restaurant's good, it's like, it may be great for her, but her tastes don't agree with mine when it comes
right.
to, you know, what's for dinner. So it can kind of go the yeah. other way around.
Well, sometimes strong mm-hmm. ties, you know them so well
mm-hmm.
that you discount their opinion. Because there comes a point where you know what they like, and you know where your likes and their likes, and I hate using the word like because Facebook took it over, but you know what
they
like.
It's a four-letter word.
It's a four-letter word now. But you know what they like, and you know where you match up, and if they say they like something, you're now having to figure out, well, do they like it the same way I do?
Yeah.
Whereas in the world of social networking, like has become that ubiquitous word that means that I'm interested in this, or I think this might be something that I might do later.
Mm-hmm.
It's taken on a whole different meaning.
Yeah.
And therefore, when somebody likes something on Facebook or likes something in a social networking scene, you're a little freer to now look into this and start doing things with it, where in a strong tie relationship, you might not have.
Right. Yeah, it's an amazing phenomenon. So in your studies,
yes.
And which university is this?
I'm at Colorado Tech.
Okay, Colorado Tech. And so where does this come in? It sounds like, you know, some of the discussion there may involve things within the organization,
yes.
colleagues and,
right.
you know, management, employee relationships and that kind of
yes.
thing. What kind of changes, you know, are, you know, the headlines right now, mm-hmm. you know, big things would we be looking at?
Well, the big things that we're seeing is the way that the business itself is structured. Because of social networking and the ability to communicate in channels way beyond just an email now, communicating through a website, Yammer, which is kind of a Twitter for a business environment,
mm-hmm.
As well as straight through Facebook, we're seeing that the organizations seem to be flattening even more than they used to. You're seeing a drive more towards self-managed teams
mm-hmm.
and teams that interact in a virtual way, not necessarily sitting in the same place, but the further propagation of the idea that just because you and I work on the same thing and work for the same company, we don't have to sit in the same office or even the same country. We're seeing businesses that now have pushed their borders to the point where I firmly think that if we sat down to invent the office today, it wouldn't be Cube Farms anymore. It wouldn't be a building where people walk into anymore, because you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And social networks, social media, the internet period has really pushed that type of change to the point where the idea of a brick and mortar company actually being brick and mortar in one place is starting to change. And companies are realizing they don't have to do that anymore.
What's a recommendable resource on that, either a book or a website that talks more about these types of ideas, these progressive ideas within the organization that you would recommend to somebody?
Oh, gracious. Tell you what, I've got a list together, and I'll get that list to you so that you can publish it.
Awesome. I look forward to that, because after reading the Clue Train Manifesto, I read mm-hmm. it when it first came out, and at
yes.
first it was like, nah, I don't know. But now after reading it again here, you know, about 3 years ago, it's like, oh, okay, I can really see a lot of this
right.
organizational type stuff
yes.
afoot.
Well, and actually, there is a move right now to look at the Clue Train and bring it even more forward, looking at how it has changed.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually something that if it hasn't been read, that should probably be the first read.
Okay.
Everybody should read that.
And let me ask you this. So
yes.
should they read the original or the 10-year anniversary edition with all the commentary on it?
I would read the original first.
Okay. Okay.
For the main reason that the original, without the commentary,
mm-hmm.
you need to read it and develop your own thought and what you think of it, and then read the commentary in the 10-year anniversary version. Because the comparison between what you think when you first read it and then what happened in the 10 years since it came out, it can, even that can change the way you think about it.
Great, great. So Andy, tell us, how do we connect with you online? Where's a good spot for that?
Well, you can connect with me. I'm on just about everywhere. I'm on Twitter is AndyG1128, but I also have a blog that I've stood up on WordPress.com. You can go to andyg.wordpress.com. It is in the process of morphing right now. It was a personal blog where I'm turning it more into an organizational development type of blog where we talk about ideas such as Clue Train, such as the human relations model of management, you know, other ideas that we talk about, plus the occasional rant. It has to be there. But from that website, it's andyg.wordpress.org. The website name is Green Eggs and Spam.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
From there, you can link to any of my social sites,
okay.
Any place I am, from Facebook to Twitter to beyond.
Gotcha. Well, hey, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been very interesting. Looking to hear more about what you've got going through your head there.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right.
So, hey, so we've got the breakfast coming up.
August 4th, special guest Elizabeth Kawine from mm-hmm. Memphis Music Foundation.
And she'll also be our podcast guest next week, is that right?
Yes, she will.
Okay, good. Look forward to having her here. And it was very interesting to talk with Andy. I sure, you know, hope to get him back on here in maybe a year's time or something like that and see what else is going on in this whole organizational development and change realm.
All right, well, I think that's our time today.
Hey, so yeah, look forward to next week. Come join us at the breakfast. And if by chance you missed that, plan on getting in touch with us at the Davis Kid Twilight Camp somewhere. What?
The 19th.
The 19th of August already.
Gosh, time is flying. All right. Well, thank you.
The Social Expedition Podcast is produced at the offices of LunaWeb, a Memphis leader in web development and social media, online at lunaweb.com. LunaWeb is a full-service web agency meeting Memphis's online needs since 1995. Our theme music is The Year Before the War by Eric Maskall, available online at ericmaskall.com. For more information about the Social Expedition, including links mentioned during the podcast, visit socialexpedition.com. Thanks for listening.